Good morning. Reverend Amy is at General Assembly, GA, in New Orleans in the service of the Living Tradition Thursday night. She walked in acknowledgement of having achieved final fellowship, and we think that's marvelous. GA services have been streaming live, but they are also recorded. This is after meditation. You do this. On UUA.org, there is a link at the top for the live streaming. Now, by the time you get home, all of the services will be done, but they are, for the most part, recorded. And it is really well worth your while to go back and enjoy particularly some of the worship services. I don't necessarily recommend the business meetings. If you were very fortunate, you streamed the Ware lecture last night and heard Brian Stevenson give an over-the-top wow of a Ware lecture. In fact, they should change it to the wow lecture. Our pulpit guest today will be Reverend Eric Moraine. Eric is an ordained Buddhist priest and a community minister here at LCUUC. He leads the Kintsugi Sangha on Thursday night at 6 p.m. Next Sunday, we will be celebrating Independence Day, with a service entitled Freedom is a Funny Word. We're borrowing a sermon written by Mike Schuller, who's the minister at the Unitarian Church in Madison, and it is a fabulous sermon. I think you will like it very, very much. And afterwards, we're going to have a burger and hot dog picnic, and we hope you will join us. During the summer, there is no formal religious education. Children are welcome in the service, but if restlessness strikes, they can leave at any time and go to the social hall where there will be supervised activities. And please take a moment now to silence electronics that you might have with you today that might play funny songs during the service. Thank you very much. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us most. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within. Come, let us worship together. Please take a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to the people around you this morning. Claudia, you're up. Thank you very much. For the wonder and inspiration we seek from sun and stars and all the lights of the heavens, we light this chalice. These words are by Cynthia Landrum. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 345 in the gray hymnal. With joy, we claim the growing light. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we strive to bring a message of hope and grace to an imperfect world. My name is Sue Andrews, and I am the worship associate for this morning's service. Our theme this morning is light. When we say, as we do each week, "You are welcome here," we are acknowledging, praising, and welcoming the divine spark in each of us. We are saying, "This little light of yours, let it shine here. May our lights be as a rainbow, our differences a banner of beauty, a gift of the light." Please join us for refreshments and conversation in the social hall after the service. We are so very glad that you have chosen to be here to worship with us, to celebrate with us today. Changing gears to the offering. The offering is a sacrament of the free church. We pass these baskets each Sunday, even though most of us have some kind of electronic way to fulfill our pledge. And we do so to remind ourselves that it is our time, our talents, our financial contributions that nourish this community and make it possible. Indeed, it is our generosity that keeps the lights on. The morning offering will now be given and received. Thank you for these gifts given and received for the work of this community. And thank you for everything you do for this blessed and beloved community of ours. One of the reasons that we come together in beloved community here is to share our laughter and our tears. And we do this in several ways. Before the service, you are always welcome to come up and light a candle silently at the candle table. During the service, we speak aloud. And the worship associate, in this case, our esteemed guest speaker, will light the candles for us. So would anyone who has a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand, and an usher will bring you a microphone.
Hi, I'm Nancy. For you guys who don't know, the music director. This is Doug, the choir director. Tracy, one of our accompanists, and Chris Rollins, the DRE. And we just want to light a big, huge candle of joy for Amy and her acceptance into final fellowship for the UUA.
We collectively would like to celebrate with Amy, and she's going to be on some well-deserved vacation time, but she will be returning in August to lead us. So we're going to plan on a celebration in one of our August services, and we also would like to give her a gift from the congregation in the form of a stole. So I will be sending out some communications in the coming weeks on how you can help if you would like to contribute to our gift. Thank you.
Would you like a candle of celebration for the marriage of Anna Haler and Ben Trolio last weekend in Boston?
I'd like to light a candle of joy that both of our senators chose to, one of whom broke party line votes in Washington to hold off on a decision on the newest health care bill.
This is Heidi. I have a joy. Y'all might think it's a little weird, but my joy is I like the construction out there right now. And I'm enjoying the zoo interchange. Sorry, guys, it's my project.
This is Claire. As many of you know, June is Pride Month. And although I'm not gay, I celebrate with everybody who is. And this week also marks the one-year anniversary of former President Obama signing the Marriage Equality Act. And I just really hope that the new administration doesn't knock it down. You love who you love.
This is Carol. I guess a candle of support for my siblings. 25 years ago today, we lost my dad. And this is the first year my mom's up there with them. Thank you.
And we light one last candle for those joys and sorrows which we hold deeply, but which have not been named here today.
So I goofed up in the order of service. I'm going to switch these two pieces around a little bit. Light, what is it? Noun, definition, electromagnetic radiation within a certain portion of the frequency spectrum, usually referring to wavelengths in the range of 400 to 700 nanometers and therefore visible to the human eye. Light is emitted and absorbed in packets called photons, which are the quantum of the electromagnetic field, including all electromagnetic radiation, and they are the force carrier for the electromagnetic force. Albert Einstein published a paper in 1905 titled The Photoelectric Effect, in which he proposed this theory. This revolutionized particle physics, resulted in his receiving a Nobel Prize, lifted his name to genius status, and gifted us all with E equals mc squared as the shorthand answer to life, the universe, and everything. Sincere apologies to Douglas Adams, who would argue otherwise. We can say with great certainty that the speed of a photon in vacuum is 299,792,458 meters per second. We can say with great certainty that this does not change under any circumstances. This is one of the fundamental constants of the universe, but we can't yet fully explain why. We can say with great certainty that photons simultaneously exhibit properties of waves and particles, depending only on how they are observed. But we can't yet fully explain how that's possible. In attempting to define light, Physics has created more than some upwards of 46 different units of measurement. And yet, faced with the childlike simple question of, what is it? I have to default back to Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart, who said it best, I shall not today attempt to further define this. I could never succeed in intelligibly doing so. But I know it when I see it.
I wandered in nameless, life filled with sin. I wouldn't let my dear Savior in. Then Jesus came like a stranger.
It's time to take a breath and exhale and just settle into the morning. With the echoes of that music still floating in the room, I want you to find your seat underneath you and just slowly, gently join me in a few moments of silent prayer or meditation. I dreamed I was running. The more I ran, the less I traveled. I saw the light, that light, the true light, but it was receding. I felt the tears of regret. My soul wept, for it longed for the light. Leaden feet dragged me down, and the light, that light, the true light, it diminished. I woke in cold dawn, a longing in my being, such sadness. This I've never felt before, and I longed for the light, that light, the true light. And so now my soul's in turmoil, forever seeking deep within the universe, within the time continuum, the light, I'm seeking that true light. Sometimes, rarely in the works of man or the works of poets, sometimes I see the light, the true light, and I'm comforted. Losing lights, light that lights the way. By Andy Brooks. So rise and join me as you're able, and let's sing hymn number 293 in the gray hymnal, O Star of Truth. Good morning. How are you? So as Sue mentioned earlier, I have an ordination in a Rinzai Zen lineage. And some time ago, I was challenged by somebody to do a service that wasn't Zen or wasn't Buddhist. So if you see me on Thursday nights, I would normally wear this necktie and be wearing that Zen costume. But this morning, I'm wearing this necktie and the costume of a Eurocentric postmodernist. And I had to hide the Zen references inside the other stuff. So if anybody can catch them, come see me in the social hall. I'll buy you a free coffee after the service. So back in the good old days, life was short. People didn't live very long, and it was difficult. One could say those early ancestors, our hunter-gatherers, they lived pretty close to the land, struggling to stay warm, trying hard to peer into the darkness to see where the dangerous, scary stuff was lurking, working hard to get enough to eat. Chasing down wild animals with pointy sticks was hard work. The days were good, the nights not so much. Nights were where the dangerous stuff was. And when the sun shone, plants grew, people stayed warm, the food animals showed up, and when the sun set, things changed a bit. At night, it was a lot more difficult and a lot more dangerous. And that source of light that they depended on is actually hydrogen fusion, right? Albert Einstein. Now, they didn't quite understand that, those folks on the African plains. All they understood was that death comes quickly without sunlight. And interestingly, in time, some of those folks learned how to store hydrogen fusion energy. Can you believe it? And they didn't actually do it the way Jerry's doing it with PV panels and maybe batteries. They used plows and they stored sunlight in the form of grain and nuts and seeds and dried meat and firewood. And they managed to stretch the daylight hours into the times that weren't quite so well lit. The better they became at being farmers, the longer we tended to live. And in spite of that advancing technology and our ever-increasing skill in being solar harvesters, at times truly terrifying things would happen if the sun didn't shine because of a cloudy snap or unusually cold weather, or sometimes even worse. So I want to give you the 60-day forecast right now so you can make plans, because shortly before noon on August 21st, the great dragon is going to appear without warning and will once again consume the sun. Can you imagine how terrifying that would have been to not understand what was happening and to all of a sudden see the giver of all life and light slowly consumed, slowly extinguished before your eyes? And you thought a burned out light bulb in the basement stairwell was bad. Right. Now, your mileage may vary. You may want to try this for yourself. I'm not completely sure, but it seems to be well proven that banging on pots and pans will not change the length of a solar eclipse. The dragon will eventually become frightened, will eventually spit out the sun, and the dangerous, scary time will pass. But it seems as though people of old still wanted to influence these huge forces which held their lives in sway. And maybe banging on pots and pans didn't work. Perhaps something else might work better. And so I think people hunted around and looked for ways to try to influence these foundational factors concerning and affecting their lives. The sun, in time, became a central symbol for many early religions because of its huge significance as a provider of light and sustenance in all its forms. Being prone to ritual, ceremony, humans adopted the sun and smaller versions of the sun as an almost universal symbol of life. Christianity refers to the Jewish Midrash of Genesis, the first book of the Christian Old Testament, wherein the primary utterance of the creation of the entire universe, who remembers it? Let there be light. That's exactly right. Judaism cherishes the Ner Tamid, the temple flame, which miraculously burned for 7 days, even though there was only oil for one day. This has been memorialized in the form of the menorah, which shines brightly in many households during the Festival of Lights, also called the Hanukkah. Catholics keep a chancel candle lit in the sanctuary to show that the Lord is ever present. Hindus have a goddess named Lakshmi, the goddess of light, the symbol of supreme blessing, bliss, and divine power. The Egyptians and Aztecs, in Africa and India and China, everywhere you turn, sun and light are foundational symbols in ritual and religion. Japan even went so far as to name itself the land of the rising sun. Now, lest we be excluded, Europeans were also sun worshippers. The Celtic reverence for light predates Christianity by some 300 to 400 years. when the new kids on the block, the Christians, arrived, they aligned their celebrations of Jesus' birth with the existing Celtic and Roman festivals of light already taking place at that time of the year. A small, distant remnant of those old festivities still remains today in the form of the Yule log and those little teeny lights on the evergreen tree at Christmas time. Were this a Scandinavian congregation today, we would have probably been out this weekend celebrating the longest day of the year with huge bonfires, preferably on mountaintops if we had one handy. And in some cases, some locations, people still practice the even older, ancient ritual of making large spoked hoops of straw and rolling them down mountainside meadows after they're lit. And it's still done today. So, speaking of crosses, there's another symbol of the sun that's not quite as cheery, but yet I still want to mention that awful Nazi symbol, the swastika. It is also, in fact, a sun sign. What Hitler took for his own in the 1920s actually predates him by some 4,000 years. The cross with bent arms first appearing in the Indus Valley civilization as a sun symbol used for religious worship. It continued to be a common symbol of life and light in old Hindu and Buddhist art. And today, this Nazi spinning wheel is still a frightening symbol of the dark times when racism, tyranny, and fascism were running amok and many, many good people lost their lives. We UUs have a connection with light and our very own small sun, our flaming chalice. So for just a minute, I want to continue with the World War II history lesson. Back in the 1920s, there was this guy, Hans Deutsch. He was a politically active Austrian artist. And he got himself into trouble because of cartoons he'd drawn, which were critical of the Nazis. And so he was forced to leave. And he migrated through Germany and through France and eventually ended up in Portugal, where he bumped into a guy named Reverend Charles Joy, who was in charge of a small group of activists who were busy providing aid and covert transport out to the West for the Eastern European refugees escaping the spreading Nazi threat. This group, this young startup group, the Unitarian Service Committee, they had a small problem. So as the UUA website describes it, the Unitarian Service Committee ran a cloak and dagger group of agents and couriers, disguises, signs, countersigns, midnight runs across the guarded borders. They were the means of freedom back in those days. And when a document may keep a man or woman out of jail, give them standing with governments and police, it's important that it looks important. Hans was asked by Reverend Joy to create a symbol for the Unitarian Service Committee to use on official paperwork, to make them look official, to give dignity and importance to them, and at the same time to symbolize the spirit of the work that was being done. The result of that meeting was a simple sketch of a flame hovering over a chalice. So was this flame the holy oil lamp burning in the Jewish temple? Or was it the light of reason, which the Greeks so revered? Perhaps it was a beacon of freedom and hope, which the Allied forces fighting Hitler were offering. Well, in his own words, Hans Deutsch described the flaming chalice as a symbol of faith in action, sacrifice, self-denial, and a readiness to serve. What sprang forth from his pen that day was adopted as not just the official seal of the Unitarian Service Committee, but has now become the global symbol of Unitarian Universalism and is immortalized in every UU congregation every time we light the chalice. These symbols of the sun and of light and of life are inextricably intertwined in our actions and in our language. They are symbols of the good and the beautiful and of all that is positive in the world. Born in the darkness of World War II, this mini sun, this is the fire of change, and the light that it gives off is the light of faith in action, in service to social justice for all. This flaming chalice remains a symbol of desire for action. Action to bring positive change to a world that seems forever to be slipping into the darkness. So my wish for you is that this flame kindle in you your faith in the essential goodness of humanity. To quote a poem that Max Ehrmann wrote, with all its sham, drudgery, and broken dreams, it is still a beautiful world. So put a candle in the window and keep the flame of hope burning bright in your hearts. Never forget the invincible power of your true, compassionate heart. And in the ancient Pali language, Atadipa, you are this light. So be it. So it looks like we have lots of time. And I would love to open this up to Polylog. If you're interested in contributing or sharing a bit, an usher will find you with a microphone. Save enough room for everybody who wants to speak to have a moment or two. I'm curious as to what do you see when you look at the flaming chalice? What is that for you?
Bud Hudson here, sitting very close to Pat Ludwig. And we had the delight to visit her son and the son's family yesterday. And they have two children, Elsie and Lucas. Lucas is 3 years old. And a couple nights ago, they were outside catching fireflies. And he caught one in his hands, looked at it, and said, you know, when you let it go, it becomes a star.
This is Rick. I'm reminded often when I see the light of one of my favorite people, Leonard Cohen. There's a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in.
Gus, as we all know, the phrase light of reason goes way back. And I like to think of light and the light of reason as shining on our dark and unconscious, if you will, to use a Freudian term, things that are about us that are unknown. And what's cool about the light of reason is that it's the same thing as insight, that I can see inside myself because of that light. I know reason is a very hackneyed word, and it means a lot of things, and for a lot of people it means something very negative. Reason stands for control. It stands for too much analysis. It stands for pointy-headed intellectualism. But at the same time, it is the light of our inner sight, and I think without that we would be lost. So that's what I think of when I think of the light of reason.
Thank you, Gus. In keeping with that insight piece, that's where Jung came up with this term of shadow, right? The things which we are unconscious to. And this light of insight and light of reason eventually brings what's in shadow into visibility.
This is Jerry, and thank you, Eric, for your talk. And I appreciate your mention of Einstein, how important he was to our worldview in the 20th century. And at the time that he proposed his theory of relativity back in Germany back in the 1920s, he ran into a firestorm from the Nazis. I don't know if any of you have been seeing the TV series that's on the Discovery Channel on Tuesday nights about Einstein, which is portraying his life. But the powers that be in Nazi Germany considered relativity to be Jewish physics, something to be purged, and Einstein was lucky to have gotten out of Germany with his life. As was Galileo back in the early days, lucky to get out of the Inquisition with his life for discovering and proclaiming that the Earth was not the center of the universe. So enlightenment is very important to us, and I appreciate your talk today.
And this is Jim. Oftentimes, or there are times when I look at our chalice and think of, even in my childhood, I would look at a fire or a candle and think of how long humans have been looking into a fire and think about what early man's thoughts might have been when staring into a fire at night.
Thank you for that. It's one of the ways in which humans are different from all the other animals on this planet. We have figured out how to work with fire and use it to our advantage in terms of cooking food and clearing land and a number of other things as well, some of which are problematic. But as far as I know, we're the only animal that directly, deliberately uses flame.
Hi, this is Pam. Thank you, Eric. I hadn't quite thought of the chalice in that way, and it's a very hopeful, beautiful way to begin to think about this now. I just wanted to share, too, last night we did celebrate with a few work friends the summer solstice, and I highly recommend it to people in Denmark, where I had lived for a year. You see fires in every backyard at the time of summer solstice. And it's such a beautiful tradition. And I really didn't realize this until this morning, what had happened after this, you know, 9 or 10 of us sitting around a huge bonfire for a while last night and having someone play some music and just visiting. In the kitchen when we gathered, there was a moment when several people were there and we were just sort of standing in a group. And there was such energy that's so uncommon. These are people we've known for many years. But there was such a feeling of spirituality and energy that we all kind of commented on that. And I do think there's something very beautiful about sitting around a campfire. And it's a wonderful thought to, you know, bring in a tradition like that or in other ways as well.
My name is Jim.
Good morning, Jim.
I said a couple of weeks ago, I'm a musician.
Yeah.
And my relation to this is not just music, but this is also a symbol of a clarity. That's the word that jumps into my head. And I said before, making music doesn't make much sense in the real world. But the reason I still do it is because it's the way to get to a certain kind of clarity that can't be predicted or chased. And maybe it's creative process, but not necessarily. Because it's almost like a stream you find yourself on. Clarity of purpose, of thought, of vision. This is a symbol too.
Thank you. It's a good thing when the lights go on. Yeah.
I'm Yvonne, and to me it really represents the mystery, because of course that flame is up there dancing, and And it's the visible portion of that spectrum that we can experience. But, of course, it goes on beyond our senses. And who knows what other creatures, critters, plants, whatever, use and experience a different portion of that energy spectrum. So to me, it represents the mystery of all that we see and what we don't see.
Thank you. Yeah, that was that mysterious nature part of this was at the beginning of my sermon, but it got edited out as I moved along. It's one of the games I like to kind of, one of the mental games I like to play. We can kind of reduce ourselves to not knowing down to mystery. And that can happen pretty quickly in spite of all kinds of insight into how the universe works. And exactly what happens here, exactly why, when these carbon-carbon bonds are broken and these electrons are in these excited states and they fall back, what is it exactly they're emitting again? These photons? What is that stuff? Well, that's right. We don't know. It's a mystery. We still don't know. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Claudia, and I thought this little sermon thing today was very coincidental because I was just reading a book the other day, which I actually have with me. It's called Interpreter of Maladies, and one of the stories in it was about a woman going to visit the Sun Temple in India in honor of a Hindu god, and it was really funny because the whole story was basically how she had this dark secret in her, and she hadn't shared it with anybody. And then she went to the Sun Temple and found that clarity, and she finally shared it with her family and felt relieved in that way. So to me, light is so important because it needs darkness, that shadow, to truly shine, to thrive. And I think that religion in general, how you explained, that's basically how, well, one of the reasons that religion came about was to sort of explain the darkness and the light. And I think that our chalice here is wonderful in that because it represents all the different lights and darknesses of religion. And no matter what religion you're in, you can find clarity with it. So,
another thing that we learned in Sangha is that shadow can cover our light and our strengths that we have not acknowledged. And that goes back to the first reading, and that we can be afraid of the gifts that we have. And that really, if we use the gifts, if we can uncover the gifts and not be afraid, we can drive out all shadow.
Thank you. Well said. We've got time for maybe one more. Maybe two more.
This is Barbara. It just occurred to me, I'm reading a book currently called The Secret Life of Trees. It's by Peter Wohlleben, who was a forester in Germany for 20 years and is now in Canada as a forester. And he talked about the electricity, and this is underground, that through electrical impulses, I guess, the trees, through their root system, are all interconnected, and they signal to each other if there's, like, an insect coming that could harm them, so they can send up whatever they need to protect themselves. And also, they signal somehow through the leaves. I can't remember how they did that right now. But yes, it goes more electricity, but as you said, that's light or leads to light. So it's even happening underground.
Yeah. One more.
Great.
Make it good.
Yeah. So this is Al. And you know, the chalice, especially for me in this church, reminds me of the community that we create. And I see the light in youth and adults and that spark of sharing and connection. The other thing is that looking at the light in the chalice for me, I'm reminded, although we're many of us taught or reinforced that light is constant, you look at that flame, it is not. And so reflecting on being present, each time you think you are present, well, look again, because it's a new presence.
Thank you. So join me, arise as you are willing and able. The teal hymnal, the very first hymnal in the book, Morning Has Come, number 1000. Came closer, walked right next to me. I walked with it sometimes, and sometimes it walked with me. I lived in it sometimes, and sometimes it lived in me. I hold that light sometimes, and sometimes the light holds me. Until I am the light, I will live in mystery. Go forth in love and light to serve the world. So be it.